It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Oh. Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
You think football is still fun?
Yes.
Sir?
Yes. No.
No?
Sir? It was fun.
Not anymore, though, is it? Is it?
No, not by now.
No, it's not fun anymore. No. Not even a little bit.
Just look at that. He hit the four. Gotta get some free steak. You having fun yet?
Oh, yeah, I'm having a blast. Thanks.
Good.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the podcast where all movies are sports movies. I am your host, Kyle Banduho, and today we have a great returning guest. My good friend Alex McDaniel is back on the show. And I reached out to Alex because I didn't really have anything set for this week, this episode. I'd been doing some sports movies in April, kind of shifting back into, yes, all movies are sports movies, but some movies are actually sports movies. And I was like, Alex, what do you want to cover? And she suggested the 1986 rom-drama About Last Night, which she said, hey, is kind of a baseball movie or has a baseball theme. She was talking about men's softball in two scenes, but I am glad that she presented me with this one because I enjoyed the hell out of it. It was a lot to talk about, and I think it made for a great episode. And before we get into it, I want to shout out our Big Screen Sports Patreon group, especially our Big Chill producer-level patrons. That includes Aaron Figueroa, Mike Schubert, Steve Rogers, Kevin Frost, Mike D, Ryan Eager, Mike Dries, Chris Mikoski, John Craig, Stan Smith, Zach Rich, Class Day Empire, Jason Alves, Stephen Bowe, Dan McFall, Kevin Inkelman, Mack Lindsay, Kurt Ritchie, Robert Dove, Andrew Teagle, Benjamin Bauman, Jeff Esses, Anthony Scafone, Taylor Logan, Sean Hoffman, and Peter Roble. Big thanks to them and all of our patrons for supporting this show. If you want to support the show and if you want to get in on selections for our upcoming theme month, the patrons have picked a new theme month for May. There's a poll out right now to pick movies for that theme month. If you want to know the month, if you want to participate in that poll, you can go to patreon.com/bigscreensports. You can, you know, pick movies for this show to cover. You can participate in live watches when we have them in our Discord, and just generally support the show, keep this thing rolling. So big thanks to our patrons for supporting us. And with that, let's talk About Last Night with me and Alex McDaniel. All right, joining me tonight on Big Screen Sports, it has been not a while, but a bit.
A minute.
It's been a minute. When you were on for Rom-Com Month, what did we talk about in Rom-Com Month?
What did we do?
I don't know.
That was like 2 months.
It was 2 months. Yeah, it was 2 months ago. Hold on. This is an incredible start to this show.
Please know that it's not because I do so many podcasts that I can't remember. That was probably the last time.
By the way, it's Alex McDaniel, everybody. Oh, the great Alex McDaniel.
That cold open was fantastic.
Yeah.
Let's get into it.
We're killing it.
Hello, everybody.
27 dresses. You, me, and Caroline did 27 dresses. A first time watch for me, which I enjoyed.
Okay. It's been, you know, a long year. It's only April. It's been a long year.
My really memory is
not what it used to be.
Just the longest year, some may say. Many people are saying the longest year.
Many are saying it's been a long year. So please know that me forgetting that was not about forgetting you or the show. I just, you know, but I'm back.
You're back. And I'm not going to reveal it now, but we have something cooking in a couple months.
Yep.
That I'm,
yeah, we do.
It's in the oven. It's bacon.
It's bacon.
It's marinating.
Yep.
That I'm excited for.
Got the pre-seasoning. Got the shake and bake bag.
Yeah.
Did you ever have shake and bake when you were? Did your?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Man, I'm just saying, life was simpler when your dinner came from a bag.
Yeah. I mean,
like hamburger helper. I don't know.
But the thing is, like, you can. Dinner can still be like, I live right next to McDonald's. Technically, dinner can still be from a bag, and it's always still really good. There are very few bagged dinners that are bad.
That's the thing. Like, our dinners do come from bags. I certainly wasn't saying I don't do bag dinner, but like, remember when it was like shake and bake night or like rice-a-roni or stovetop or
most good barbecue places just throw all the stuff in a bag and you're just taking the bag.
Put it in a bag.
Put it in a bag.
This is going great.
This
so
is
far.
Great, great pod. This is right on topic.
Speaking of things that were popular in 1986.
Yes. Yeah, there's a great transition. Great transition.
Thank
quick
you.
Quick bit of podcast business. Everyone pre-order my book. But yes, so
great book.
27 Dresses a couple months ago was a first time watch for me. And we had this week, I was like, Alex, you and I were on another podcast together, not this one. We were on another one, and we were like, we should do this again sometime, but us.
Yes.
And I was like, what should we do? And you threw out a movie that I had never seen before. And you said, funny enough, you said it actually has some baseball in it. It's actually men's softball. At beer league softball. Men's softball, which is a lot of fun to talk about. I honestly can't wait to talk about it.
Which is basically baseball. Men's softball. Mm.
But it's funny, we're recording this on NFL draft night, and which is fitting, because if you were gonna pick potentially the number one overall pick for hottest dude of all time at a certain moment, you might be going with 1986 Rob Lowe, because we were talking about last night. The 1986 romantic drama, A Man and a Woman Meet and Try to Have a Romantic Affair Despite Their Personal Problems and the Interference of Their Disapproving Friends. Romantic affair is a weird way to put that. But
also, what was it? Despite their
personal problems.
Their personal problems were they were 22. That was their personal problems.
Among other things.
Among other things. But I mean, let's start with that. But yes.
It starred the absolutely on fire Rob Lowe, the throwing 107 Demi Moore, and the there in sweaters Jim Belushi. It was directed by Edward Zwick, based on a play written by David Mamet. Got a 63% on Rotten Tomatoes. Roger Ebert gave this movie 4 out of 4 stars.
Yeah, he did.
Might be a Chicago bias thing there. This movie was set in Chicago. Alex, before we dive into everything, I like starting off with this question. What was your experience with this movie? Like, how long has this movie been in your life? And where, you know, why when I came to you and said, Alex, what should we talk about? Why did About Last Night come up?
Okay. I first knew this movie existed. Well, let me say, like, ever since I was, 11 or 12, and they started showing, like, Pretty in Pink and The Breakfast Club on TBS and Comedy Central, you know, like, back when we watched just regular TV, and they would show these movies late at night, I was like, oh, these same people, like, some variation of them are in all these movies. And then, like, we got the internet in our house and stuff. And you do some Googling, like, what's the Brat Pack? Because I was born in 86, so, like, I definitely wasn't aware of their height.
So you didn't see this in theaters as an infant?
Yeah, no, I did not.
Parents didn't take you to see this movie.
Yeah, because they didn't care. But, like, I love The Breakfast Club. I love Pretty in Pink. I did not know this movie existed until I watched the 1986 episode of I Love the 80s. Remember that, Jim?
Yeah. Oh, I love. The VH1. Yes. I think this VH1 era has come up on the show multiple times. I think you and I have discussed it. I think me and Caroline have discussed it. I think the three of us have discussed it. I Love the 80s. Mm-hmm. I Love the 90s. Surreal Life. I do know that Flavor of Love has been discussed on the show many a time.
Same universe. Same universe.
We might have to spin off the feed at some point. But yes, all that being said, I Love the 80s. Great stuff. Loved it.
So I saw it on I Love the 80s. And you remember how it was just such a brilliantly edited show. And I remember they, before they would go to commercial break, they'd be like, coming up on, you know, I Love 86. And they would show movie clips. They showed the clip of them in the shower.
Oh, wow. And that's what they led with, huh?
Yeah. And I was like, 13, 14. I don't remember when that show came out. But I mean, when you're 13, 14 and you see two actors who have been huge in your life, just culturally, and I didn't know the movie existed. And I was like, I need to see this movie as soon as possible and figure out a way to see it without my parents finding out. So that's how I was introduced to it. It's just been in the arsenal of, like, when you're having a bad day, like Dirty Dancing, About Last Night, Pretty in Pink, 27 Dresses. There, you just have, like, that collection of movies that no matter what you're doing or how you feel, that will make you feel better. But the reason I brought it up the other day is because it's also, like, the first movie I ever watched that kind of romanticized this idea of living in Chicago as a young person. And, like, I think I've talked about it on the show before, like, my mom was from Chicago, so we spent a lot of my childhood, like making trips to see my grandpa and all my family and stuff. And I'm actually moving to Chicago.
I was literally just thinking in my head, wow, I did not put it together that we're talking about a Chicago movie. I didn't put it together at all because I am fucking aloof.
And the thing is, like, I'm currently looking for a place, and I know that just the natural tendency of anybody with kids moving to a big city is suburbs, right? It's the natural thing. I do not want to live in the suburbs.
You can live with a 22-year-old kitchen supply salesman.
That's the dream, honestly. That's what I'm looking for right now. And so, but I just, like, every time I think about living in Chicago, I think about this movie. And so that's what made me watch it the other day. And then you just happened to say, hey, I'm like, have you ever seen
I haven't.
Last Night? There's men's softball, also known as baseball, in it.
All just same thing. Same, no differences. And I turned this on. I looked at it. I was like, oh, Rob Lowe. I like Rob Lowe. I'm more familiar with the aura of who Rob Lowe was in the 80s than 80s Rob Lowe. I haven't seen San Elmo's Fire. I've obviously seen The Outsiders 500,000 times. As soon as I finished this movie, I told Jacqueline, I was like, I probably need to watch San Elmo's Fire. I just need to start, you know, getting that, for lack of a better word, like getting like grimy Rob Lowe into my life. Because like Rob Lowe, I'm sure we'll get into it, was...
Yeah, we will.
was a little grimy in this period. Like, and has been very open about this, like he will be the first person to admit that he was, he was doing some things. He was in it. He was in the shit. And,
he was busy.
Yeah. Very, very busy. The man did well. I will say I didn't go into it with the highest hopes because you think like 80s rom-com or it's like, what is this going to be? And I found myself really enjoying it. And like, I thought a lot of it was really, really good. I thought this couple shouldn't have worked for a lot of reasons and we'll get into it. But I thought some of the conversation, some of the dialogue between them was actually really, really strong. Like I was fairly bought into them. I thought they were absolutely electric together. Like these are like Demi Moore and Rob Lowe and let's get into it. Like, I was like, this might be the hottest movie couple ever. Because like Rob Lowe, if I could switch general looks and vibes with anyone, it might be Rob Lowe in that like softball uniform in this movie. He was so good looking in the 80s that a show about like nostalgia, like romanticizing the 80s and Stranger Things had to make a character that resembled him because of how handsome he was. And
Demi Moore, a dream.
I was thinking about it while I was watching this. That like Demi Moore, she's obviously beautiful. She's aged wonderfully. She's, you know, there's Ghost, there's G.I. Jane, there's A Few Good Men, just all this stuff. But I was watching this and I was like, Demi Moore, I truly was unfamiliar with your game. Like I knew she was good looking, but I at this point, and it might've been cause she was right. She's her and Rob Lowe together. But I was like, I knew you had it. I just didn't know you had it like that.
She's incredible. Still is. I mean, God, she.
And they were both legitimately like very young. Like it's almost weird to talk. They're at this point. They're both over 10 years younger than I am now.
Yeah. They're super, super young. And they had already, you know, like she'd already gone through rehab at this point. She went to rehab at 21. Like St. Elmo's Fire kind of catapulted both of them into it, which is like, you really need to see it for context, but it's okay.
I'm familiar enough. I'm familiar with the vibes. Familiar enough. I've familiarized myself with the lore.
Sure. But yeah, I mean, they're beautiful. That one sad thing is before she did this movie, she did One Crazy Summer. And this was right when she got sober. And as we know, with a lot of people who enter sobriety, they tend to gain weight, which, by the way, is not said negatively. That's just a scientific thing. Like they might eat more, just everything changes. And she didn't know she had gained like 15 or 20 pounds or something, but she could feel it in One Crazy Summer. And it really bothered her. She was in a swimsuit the whole time. And this is like let's just start with a sad note. The director, I don't want to get this wrong. This might be... Hold on. I'm going to tell the story.
That's why we don't do this thing live. We can edit anything we want.
I need to make sure that I'm right about this, but I believe, yeah, I'm right. Okay, yes, I'll double check it. But the director really wanted her for this film, even though they did audition a few other actresses. But he straight up told her, like, you're going to have to lose weight if you're going to do it. So she went crazy doing it because she knew she was going to have to do a lot of nude scenes and everything else. And it's just like, that's a sad note.
But... And this is still that point in time where there was a coke guy on every Hollywood set. It was just a thing. Had the coke guy.
Well, I mean, that's the thing too. And I know we're not talking about this movie right now, but like St. Elmo's Fire, that was the first time she and Rob Lowe worked together. But also the director of that film was not going to let her do the character unless she went to rehab. Problem was, rehab was 30 days. They started shooting at 16. So he worked it out with the rehab to make sure that, like, if she could knock out all the bullet points basically of AA and everything else in 15 days, that she could still do the film. In St. Elmo's Fire, she plays a coke addict.
Oh, like a young girl,
I know. So like
good.
She had to go through sobriety like for that. And so yeah. So by the time it was really restrictive. She talks about it in her memoir, by the way. It just sucks because I mean, About Last Night was like her first big role in a big studio film. So she was going to do whatever she had to get thinner for that. Because if you go, I've never seen One Crazy Summer, but just like Google it and look at her in that movie. She looks incredible. It's just crazy to think that anybody would be like, oh, you got to lose weight before this.
I mean, that's Hollywood to a T. But it's not surprising. I mean, I guess they were already on the ascent, but it's not surprising that they, I mean, they both are generally regarded as two of the sex symbols of the 80s, two of the best looking people of the 80s. Rob Lowe's career is like very interesting in terms of like what it eventually became. Like he's not a movie star. Not anymore.
He's a movie star.
Is he? When's the last time? I mean, I don't think he's been a movie star for 30 years.
But he was. And I think like doing a bunch of TV has sustained that like glow. It's like, I'm trying to think of a good example of like a movie star who got older and just did TV. I can't right now, but pretend I could. That is what that is.
And to be fair, he did great TV. He was great in The West Wing and he was great in Parks and Rec. So it's not.
And he's in a lot of other shows too.
Now he's on like the Lone Star 911 or whatever, the Texas version of 911.
I love it. I think he's amazing.
I haven't watched any of it. It seems like something Caroline would watch, but
Caroline catching strays on this podcast. It's okay. She's not going to listen to this one.
No, she's not. Fine. No, she's not. But is there any couple that compares to them in just general hotness? The only one that came to mind when I think about couples that like burned off the screen would be, this is kind of different phases of their lives, but Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie in Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which is like one of the famous, perhaps too hot.
Too hot, some would say.
many people were saying they were too hot.
Many people would say that might have, I would say Kate Hudson and Matthew McConaughey. And
How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
How to Lose a Guy, I almost called it 10 Things I Hate About You.
They were in another one that was...
Fool's Gold?
Yeah.
I never saw
it. It was a real like, hey, I just want to run Sahara back, but plug in Kate Hudson thing.
I think Rachel McAdams and Ryan Gosling in The Notebook. Are you joking? Like,
so,
smoking.
Yeah, Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone in Crazy Stupid Love.
Crazy
it's
Stupid
a different
Love.
Kind of, it's a different kind of like hotness, but the electricity and we've talked about it before, but the scene at at his house is one of my favorite. We're gonna have to re-up that one this year. It's too good. It's too good not to talk about again. God,
it's very good.
I love that movie.
That's a really, that's wonderful. I would say that. This is weird. I know this is weird, and I think I've talked about this on the podcast before because I know not a lot of people saw it. Robert Redford and Michelle Pfeiffer in the 1995 hit Up Close and Personal, where they played journalists.
Really?
Oh my God. Well, it's kind of inappropriate.
What kind of age gap were we working with there?
Pretty big. He's her boss. She never went to journalism school, but she like fakes it into like a she wants to be a weather girl, and literally like, that's she wants to be the the weather girl. And she auditions and she's terrible, but Robert Redford sees something in her. And it's like her journey from weather girl to serious journalist, and they fall in love along the way. And then he goes off and I haven't seen the movie in years, but at the end, like, he is revitalized his own journalism career after being a manager, and he's got to go like on the ground in Panama, maybe, I don't know. And he dies on assignment, and she is like getting a lifetime achievement award at the end, and she gives the speech for him. We're gonna table, okay, post-it note, we're doing that,
okay,
at some point. No sports month.
Yeah, I do want to say that because of the softball scenes in this movie, it does qualify for All Sports April
sports movie.
Also, Alex, if you were wondering the over under of how long it would take the giraffe to start showing the cameras inside Bo Nix's house, 12 picks. So we are already we're already staring at Bo Nix. So it's going to be a long night. Yeah.
Love it. Sports podcast.
I had one piece of trivia that I thought was interesting here. Mm-hmm. And again, this is IMDb trivia, so we don't know. Originally, this movie was to be made with John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd, but after John Belushi asked his brother Jim Belushi, who had starred in the play previously, Jim Belushi said that he didn't want John Belushi to take the part because Jim Belushi didn't want to be compared with his brother. Now, there's obviously a typo, because it wouldn't be John Belushi, it would be someone else asking Jim Belushi. So it's like, who asked Jim Belushi? But this movie, I don't know how you feel about Jim Belushi. It's probably better with John Belushi.
With John?
They often play like
that,
the straight.
Are you sure about that piece of trivia?
It says originally this movie was to be made with John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd. Listen, we're never sure. We're never sure with this trivia. But I thought it was weird.
That's weird. Well, I mean, obviously, like, this was 86,
yeah.
So John.
Yeah, it said Jim Belushi was in the play, or John Belushi was in the play. Or Jim, yes. Jim was in the play.
Jim
so
was
that,
in the
I mean,
play.
That would have,
yeah,
that would have, you know, lined up. Like, they were Chicago guys. Mammoth was Chicago
sure.
guys. So, I don't know.
Man, that's
really strange. Really strange. Because that's like, if it's not true, who got on IMDb and plugged it in there?
I know. I mean, but there's another one on IMDb. You and I just talked about this, that says, the scene where they're breaking up and Rob Lowe says, I don't love you anymore. And you see Demi kind of like gasp, just like, how mean can you be in this moment? And there's a trivia thing that's like, that was not in the script. And that gasp was real because they previously had a relationship. That is not true. I mean, they had some
stuff.
Dalliances. They had their fun. But by this point, she was madly in love with Emilio Estevez. That's not true. How does that end up on there? And it also cites Rob Lowe's memoir, I believe, as the source of that. And I've read two of them. Well, by read, I mean, I bought two of them. His two memoirs, and I did like a
wait, a he's
search
a he's a
names.
Double
Didn't
memoir guy?
So I don't know. Well, his first one was like Stories I Only Tell My Friends or something. And then his second one, because that one was so successful, was Love Life. But I haven't read either.
Well,
I've read
snippets. That's better than nothing. That's better than nothing.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's an interesting one. What was the other one? Sorry, I had this pulled up, but then we started thinking about other things, and I didn't know. I just read this. I didn't know this. Okay. At one point, Bill Murray and Nick Nolte were attached to appear in the film as the lead and supporting role,
ooh,
respectively. What?
So
I didn't. I love learning.
So that's,
as we're
that's
doing.
Bill Murray as Rob Lowe and Nick as Nick
as
Nolte
Rob Lowe.
As Belushi
as Bernie. Yeah.
Yikes!
A disastrous meeting between
yikes.
Them caused both of them to turn down the film.
Oh, I would bet I could see those two dudes not getting along.
Yeah, but this was okay. So we have some fun cameos. Well, not cameos at this point, but like big screen debuts. So you have Megan
yes.
Mullally.
Yes, is Drunk Pat in the New Year's Eve.
As Drunk Pat, and then Catherine Keener plays a cocktail waitress. We love her. What did you just find?
Bo Nix, 12th overall to the Broncos. I know this isn't an NFL draft pod, but what?
That's Bo.
What?
Welcome back to our NFL draft podcast.
The sports.
They
are
don't
here.
Stop.
And the the cameras are so delayed in Bo Nix's house that he's been announced as the pick on screen for like 30 seconds, and we're just like staring at family Nix, waiting for them to react, and everyone's sitting still. Good stuff. It's like the second time that's happened.
I love it.
Anyways, apologies.
Love
so
it.
Megan Mullally.
And Catherine Keener plays a cocktail waitress. So that's cool. That's fun. This was 86. This was like so many actors that we knew were like on the cusp of greatness. Like Rob and Demi were established at this point, but they were still reeling from, you know, wait, when did that Brat Pack article come out? You know what I'm talking about?
Yes. The
one that kind of.
Yes.
I feel like that was 87.
And this is before Rob Lowe's sex tape, right?
Yes. Yes.
This is kind of like the prequel to Rob Lowe's sex tape in many ways.
Yeah.
This is like...
You know, man, but if you were Rob Lowe, if you had his face, yeah, his scandal was in 1988. So, and that ruined him for years. I'll tell you, and I think, okay, I'm going to ask you a question, and I want you to just go, like, honestly, what was the first thing you remember ever seeing Rob Lowe in your life? Like, that's the first time I've seen this man ever.
Tommy Boy.
Mine was Wayne's World.
Really? Okay. Oh,
yes.
You know what mine actually was?
What?
It was Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me.
See, I mean,
it would have been my first Rob Lowe.
And I guarantee you my sister would probably say that. She would probably say Austin Powers was the first time, because like for me, I did not know this man existed until I was like a little kid, probably too young, watching Wayne's World with the fam. And then you have Tommy Boy, and then you have Austin Powers and the West Wing and everything else. And so like he had to really come back from Scandal. But at this point in his career, he was just out there banging everything, you know, because he's Rob Lowe.
Yes. Yes.
We're not sex shame here. Like, get it.
Yeah.
Be
and
safe,
my guy has now been happily married for like 30 years now.
Yes.
Yeah.
But at this point in time, he did not want marriage. He was just, I mean, just quintessential.
Listen, he was out there. Heartthrob. He was out there fucking. Like, he was Rob Lowe, and he was slinging it. Like many who had come before him. And, you know, I'm going to say it a million times, like, he is impossibly good looking in this movie. Like, impossibly. It's freakish. Like, it's how is someone that good looking? And I mean, he is also aged, like, in Parks and Rec, there are consistent jokes about him being good looking, and he's like 50 in that show or close.
He's still, I mean, forever he's going to be good. Yeah. He's like Robert Redford.
Yeah.
Now he's
ripping off those Atkins commercials. Then it's like, hey, it's the hot guy in the Atkins commercial. Like, he's just...
That's how you stay hot.
That's
no carbs.
No carbs. That's right. Is this a Hall of Fame All-Star starter bench warmer for you? I didn't ask.
For me personally, this is a Hall of Fame. This is like in my... I don't know what the list looks like, but it's like I said, it's in my 10 movies of like Desert Island. You only get 10 movies. This is going to be one of them.
Wow. Wow. I would say this is an All-Star... But the thing is, this isn't something you can throw on if it's on cable. You can't. This movie is unwatchable on cable, I would say.
No, it would be terrible. I don't think I've ever seen it on cable. And if I had, like, it would just not be good.
It's like when they put Superbad on cable. It's like, what are we doing here?
Also has the most incredible, maybe the most just sheer number of and most incredible 80s like music montages in movies.
Let's take a quick ad break and then we're going to talk about what worked.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Alex, this one is a Hall of Famer for you. What worked? Why is this a Hall of Famer?
Remember, I learned this thing existed when I was like 13, 14. And I think it's just a, I think it's a great rom-com for one thing, in that it's one of those that you can, and especially like, it is so quintessentially 80s, the music, even just like the way the film is edited, just everything about it. I love like the scene where they first hook up and he's like, I gotta show her my sound system. Yes. Like, let me put these headphones.
The headphones like, with like the wire, like the yes. metal, the metal wire.
The sneakers, where the sneakers are like, oh my God. I think just culturally, it's such a good snapshot of what yuppies were about in the 80s, right?
That being said, you mentioned like all the music, the score, like all the, you know, music with lyrics, like the, that basically, yeah. that's every song. Is this movie like, kind of a lot better if it's rescored? If someone goes in and like re-edits it and rescores it with like, makes it a little more modern, or just a little like less of the music and lyrics, I on one hand, I deeply appreciate the 80s-ness of it all, of the, I understand it's of the time. I was here for it. I was loving it. Every time a song came on and there was a montage, a lot of montages, I was here for it. But I was like, if this was recut a little bit and then rescored with something that was just kind of a little more modern, little less 80s, maybe a little less sax, you know, we might be.
Come on.
We might be.
This is a guy who's never seen St. Elmo's Fire.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, we might have been cooking with something. Might have had a stew going. If
I don't think so. I think you have to keep like, oh my God, so far so good. The first with like the where they're dating, you know, like the original Bob Seger song, "Living Inside My Heart."
Listen, I'll always stand for Seger.
I think this was, again, it was like they tried to cram every 80s reference they could into a movie that didn't have references, because it's just incredible. The sound system, the clothes were incredible. The, like, even just the payphones and everything. I just think it's no, you can't change it unless you remake the movie. And there was a remake in 2014, About Last Night with Kevin Hart. It was set in LA and not Chicago, but this particular movie, like redoing it, I think you make it very bland. And like, think about it, Kyle, it's 1986. Everyone's doing coke and just amassing so much credit card debt.
So much. I mean, so much. It's like, hey, these good times are never going to stop. I loved of a time. Like, I feel, I don't know if this is making me like old or just completely like normal, because everyone has this take, but I love more and more getting to just revisit a time before screens. And I say that as someone who could not be more like, the coke that these people were doing in the '80s is me looking at my phone. Like, just couldn't be more hooked on it. But I love the time. In the concept, the young people, you're working for the man all day long. You're going to the mother's man. this bar, which looks like a fucking riot. Looks like a great time. You're all doing happy mm-hmm. hours. You're all there every weekend. It's a fun hang. For a lot of this movie, it's just like a fun hang. You know people like this. If you didn't have this life in your 20s, it's something that you could easily imagine yourself in. Because like that, my life in my 20s couldn't have been less like this, but it's something that it's easy to like put yourself in with this group, where you're playing beer league softball or playing like the company sponsored softball teams, I feel like, have gone now. It's just like, now it's all ex small college baseball players who are just hopped up on steroids, and they're all sponsored yes. by Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, which is fine. You know, get active. Whatever gets you out there, that's fine. No, yeah, I think too, outside of like the time, again, we have, you're never going to go wrong with a pretty good movie that is about life as someone in your early to mid 20s in a big city.
Yes.
You know, like, because I don't know. And I realize I romanticized that because that was my dream growing up. And then I went and did it, and I was like, I'm so poor. I'm just so broke all the time.
You needed Ronald Reagan to come help things trickle down to you like these people.
Where is the trickle down of the 80s? And so,
not to talk about what didn't work, though, of like, how did they're selling kitchen supplies? Like, there's just salesmen. Come on. Like, where is he getting this money from?
It sounds, you know, we talked about how this is based on a David Mamet play, which it's not going to, didn't age well. But, you know, I think as anybody who's a writer and comes up with like a story, there are things that jump out at you as they definitely found that when they worked their way back. And I don't know the play, but I assume, like, from what I've read about the movie, it stayed pretty close to it. I could see a scenario where they knew, like, what's Danny's motivation going to be? What's the thing he wants that he feels like he can't get? And it's like, oh, owning a restaurant, and then working backward into how do we show pieces of that through his job or through his life, and then ending at restaurant equipment sales. Because I don't think you start there. I don't think you're like, I've got an idea. You got these two guys. They're selling refrigerators and trying to keep restaurants in business. I just don't think you get there. But, you know, it could
this movie is interesting because the owning a restaurant thing is like, that's a trope that happens in movies. Dream is to open a restaurant.
Always, or a bar.
This is like, the only one of those movies where the dude whose dream it is to open a restaurant doesn't have any takes on food. He's not a cook. He's not. He only talks about that he made
sauce.
The mashed potatoes for Thanksgiving, and that's the only thing. Is he romantic about the supplies? Like the supply? I want to have a restaurant because I want to have the perfect plates. Like in everything, it's like the person who wants to open a restaurant either works at a restaurant or is like an amateur chef and wants it. And he's just like, no, I like the vibe. Like, do you cook? Some, like, kind of.
He did the mashed potatoes,
the mashed potatoes and the sauce.
And in the montage with the Bob Seger song, they show him, like, painstakingly, you know, over this pot of sauce that he's, like, tasting and making the pasta. And I was on the phone with my boyfriend at the time, like, giving him play-by-play of this whole movie. And I was like, that's the one meal that every guy can cook. I don't care how bad of a cook you are. Every guy is going to be like, can I cook for you? And
spaghetti.
It's spaghetti. Every single
first
guy.
Meal, first Which, meal I ever made for my wife, chicken parmesan.
Yeah, it's classic. But you'd think, especially in the Thanksgiving scene, when he's like, "Did you get a turkey? All right, Mister aspiring restaurant owner,
you should be in charge of this." Talk
to
me
dream,
about the
it?
Fashion in this movie and your thoughts, because we've got some great Brilliant. Sweaters, some big baggy pants. But it's the cutoff tee softball jerseys, some cardigans, mm-hmm. just it's everyone's
yeah.
looking great.
Again, like classic slice of aspirational life in 1986. And like, what's funny is even Rob Lowe's ex, whatever she was, Alex, you know, if you didn't know anything about the 80s, you see this woman in this gaudy fur coat in a laundromat. Is that where,
yeah.
that's where she was?
And then at a seedy motel
and like,
is what it looked like.
Yes. Which, well, he took her there because he was in love and didn't know it and couldn't take anyone back to his place until Blondie. But we'll get into that. And like, she's wearing a fur coat. And it just shows you how many different aesthetics there really were in the 80s. Because that was my mom was the fur coat lady. Like, she had some fur coats. She was really flashy. She had the nails and the big rings. But then you also had, I love Demi's style and this whole thing. I think the best look from the 80s that we're seeing coming back a lot today is like kind of the boyfriend jeans. They're sort of shapeless, but they're cute, and the sweaters and the sneakers. And like,
yeah,
I think it's great. I loved it. I mean, her roommate, played by
yes.
the incredible Elizabeth Perkins, also representative of what a lot of women wore in the 80s, of like, she was a teacher, she wore like the long skirts and all that
talked
stuff.
About virginity
but
with her students,
like,
and just as they did.
Yeah,
we need to put another sticky note of something we need to talk about: the after party seasons 1 and 2, a delight, because Elizabeth
I haven't watched 2.
Elizabeth Perkins is in 2 and she's
yes.
great. She's absolutely great.
Brilliant.
I want to talk about the thing that this movie gets extremely right, is that young people are really bad at figuring out both life and how to date properly, like not calling it a thing, not calling what it. I mean, it really feels like, because they kind of move in on a little bit of a whim, and it truly mm-hmm. feels like that feeling of two people playing house. Like they
yes.
they seem there's some, I think at the time, because this was at the time people were like still getting married and like when they're 20, getting out of high school and, you know, getting a house that you could actually afford back then and things like that. And like, you know, moving in early together. But watching it with this lens, it truly feels like two people who are probably a little too young to move in together, to know really anything about themselves, the other person, and two people just like trying to play house and really trying to fake it and figure it out. Like it's extremely correct that it kind of crashed and burned the first time they moved in together.
Well, and when you, I hadn't really thought about this until I rewatched it this week for the podcast, because it's one of those movies like I turn it on and I watch it, but I know it so well that I don't really, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it's kind of like when you drive home or something, you don't really think about where you're going. And the timeline here is a little insane because they meet in the summer, like toward the end of the summer. They are living together by like October, November, because we have Thanksgiving. They break up on New Year's. On St. Patrick's Day, he confronts her and says, "I love you." She says, "It's taken a long time to get over you. It's been 2 months."
Man, I did not clock the timeline of.
And then
wow,
we're back to summer at the end of the movie because they're back at the softball thing.
Wow.
And so, yeah, this was fast. And I was 22, 23 once. And I was in a similar situation and things moved very fast and we were like living together, but like we both had our places, but like we were at one place very soon after we got together and we ended up getting engaged and, you know, it didn't work out for many reasons.
Yeah. You went to Mother's on New Year's and things went sideways.
And he was like making out with some girl. Yeah, and I was like, hey,
making
man.
Out with Nick Offerman's wife. And it just got
weird.
It's
really rude. But like, you know, looking back on that, and I'll be candid about it because I'm not going to give his name. He and I talk every now and then, like maybe once every year or so, and he's very happily married with a baby, and we're cool.
It's actually Rob Lowe who you're talking about.
It's Rob Lowe. I was engaged to
Rob Lowe.
He asked me a few years ago, he's like, "What do you think went wrong? Like, where did we go wrong? Because when we were happy, we were happy. When we weren't. I was like, you know, we went wrong. Thinking that we knew our whole lives, like what we would want when we were 22, that's where we went wrong. We didn't know how to communicate. We didn't, because we were 22. We were getting our college degrees. And I'm not knocking anybody who meets the love of their life young and stays in them. That's great. I'm saying it never occurred to us that just because you're an adult that you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that's what we have here.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, did we see enough? Because we get the happy-ish ending where they reunite at softball and, you know, they're Rob Lowe's looking good. Demi Moore's looking good. They kind of reunite. They, you know, they go after
each
other.
She's
on a bike. Yeah. Did we see enough from this couple to root for them? Because most of living together is spent not working out. There's very few. There is more tough moments than good moments for this couple. Like it's not just growing pains. It's things that are like legitimate arguments going south very early.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I think moving in together was the worst decision of all the bad decisions like that, because they didn't know each other. She's looking through his stuff. You know, he's got exes, like,
he's got the woman who he was apparently the other man in the relationship calling the house about to holler at him.
Well, yeah. So like, that's why she goes to the laundromat, is so she can like get on a payphone and call him, which, God, so much work when you didn't have cell phones, by the way.
So much,
like,
so
it was
much.
It a
work.
Lot of work to have an
affair. Yeah, it really was.
But like, they didn't know how to talk to each other. And part of me really wants to believe if they had taken things slowly and still had a lot of fun together, whatever, but not added all of that in where they were exactly like you said, playing house, that it would have been healthier. I don't know. Someone asked Rob Lowe about this a few years ago. Like, where do you think they are now? Like, where would we? He's like, oh, I think they definitely got back together and they had to learn and they had to confront their issues. But it's hard to be a person in 2024 watching this movie and just be like, go to therapy now. Yeah.
And you know they
get
wouldn't.
There.
Yeah. They
do not pass go.
They might have just been just so each so hot that it's like we can't get with anybody else. Like we're the yeah. we're like when you know atoms collide or something. It's just like there's nothing else that's gonna work here.
Inevitable
has to happen. What else worked about this one?
I love the music montages, of course. Let's see. I do love a lot about this, and I'm trying not to be so rose-colored about it.
Can we? But... I mean, I will say, like, sex scenes have been phased out in movies, kind of. Like, we don't see them nearly as often. And when you think, like, 70s and 80s rom-com or whatever, you go, oh, gratuitous nudity. Like, unneeded nudity.
Yeah.
The sex scenes in this movie, like, they know what they're doing. They are on fire. The shower yes. is one of the most brazen things I've ever seen on a film that still kind of works. Because, like, that's what...
It works.
They're 22, and they're hot. Like, this is what... Like, that's what
of
they...
Of course they're getting in the shower.
Yeah, of course they're just, like, naked the whole time. Like, they are the two hottest people in Chicago. Like, of course they're doing this stuff. Like, it's...
Of course.
Yeah, you know.
Every surface in that apartment, I'm sure. Oh, just
yeah, don't bring a black light in there. And in the same note, like the movie itself is really crass. Like think about the opening story that Jim Belushi yes. is telling. Like that's not something that happens either. Like it's very and like not to be like gross, but like that is guys talk like that, have talked like that, have told stories like that, like have absolutely lied to their friends like that. Like Belushi's yes. saying, like
yes,
you know it's
yeah,
it's real.
But I think it was. It was well done. And what's interesting is at this point, so, you know, Demi and Rob first met and worked together on St. Elmo's Fire. The way Rob tells it is they were brought in to the director's office to just kind of hang out, talk to each other, see if they had any chemistry, even though in St. Elmo's Fire, they weren't technically together. But I haven't watched this movie in a while, but I believe like, they do have scenes together, like they're friends, and there's a suggestion that you know I don't want to spoil it for you is the thing, but so the way Rob tells it is they hung out for a few weeks to test their chemistry, and you know the insinuation is they were just hooking up a lot. The way Demi tells it in her memoir, she's like, I know that Rob described it as a hot and heavy thing in his memoir. It was like one night. So, but by this time, they had already worked together. But she was very much in love with him. I don't know the timeline on this, but almost engaged or already engaged to Emilio Estevez, part of the Brat Pack, who was Rob's friend. And she said in her memoir that like, because they were friends and because of like that it made boundaries easier, made those scenes easier to kind of lean into because they clearly knew where the boundaries were. So they weren't like crossing that, but like, my God. And something I brought up in our group text today was that I wish I should have jotted it down, but Mindy Kaling once said in one of her books, they're all brilliant, about like how actors say when they do sex scenes or like romantic scenes in movies, that it's just professional, it's just a job. And she's like, that's bullshit. It's awesome. And it's like you cheating that you can get away with. It's like permissible. I don't know how you watch those scenes.
Yeah, there's just no way them doing that shower thing was not like sexual in a way. And like, you've got Estevez in the corner in the cuck chair, just watching it. There's no way it's too much. It's too fit. I mean, they're as physically close as two people can get. Cause a lot of movie sex scenes are like someone's laying down, someone is hovering over them and there's a sheet over them. Like you know, they are fucking playing Twister in the shower, just as close as they could possibly be.
And like in the montage, the Bob Seger montage, which is my favorite, because that's the one that shows like, okay, they had some initial rough patches because they just moved in, but now they're like settling into their new home. Oh my God, the way she arches her back. One day, I've had this thought a lot since my mom passed away. One day, I'm going to die. Jack is going to like do just like some digital searching of what I did. And he'll find this episode and he'll just... First play and be like, the way she arched her back. Anyway, but still, it was beautiful. gorgeous scenes.
It really was. It really was. This one also has one of my favorite movie tropes, which is guy says something extremely shitty to his girlfriend and then immediately after finds out that she got him a very thoughtful gift. The Wedding Singer, things like that. That's my favorite. It's one of the most guy things ever. To just be a dick for no reason and then find out that they were getting you something that was very well thought out, touching, something you'd really appreciate. It works for me every time.
Yep. It's classic because how else do you show that a guy can be shitty? You've got to be very blatant about it.
Yeah.
It's got to be when there's a gift involved.
It has to be.
Which you've also reminded me, my favorite, I'll just tell you right now, my favorite supporting character in this movie is the bear's helmet lamp. I don't know if you noticed how many appearances this made in the movie, but when they're having their very classy New Year's Eve dinner, look in the back and just this bear's lamp.
I kind of want it.
The
Rewatchables,
I think I have to get
has
it.
A wonderful category on their show of like what piece of memorabilia would you want from the movie. This one would be easy. It's that bear's helmet lamp.
Bear's lamp. 100%.
Let's get into what didn't work. We've already talked about him wanting to open a restaurant with zero thoughts on food. I wanted to throw it out since this is obviously a sports movie. Why is he playing softball without a glove? Like, he takes a fucking laser off the hand and just kept, like, that's not normal. It's not.
Man, I don't know. I didn't even notice.
I was here. I was like, this is a men's softball movie. Like, I'm picking up on this. It was tough. But what doesn't work about this movie?
I think a lot. I mean, there are definitely cringy scenes and there's some really sharp writing in it. And there's some really stumbly bumbly writing, as I call it. Like, God, the phone call the morning after when she's like, I wanted to call about last night. He's like, that's why I wanted to talk to you about last night. Just like
Leo
quit,
pointing
just
at
stop,
the screen
y'all.
Meme.
Yeah. And it's some of it's just, you know, a little much. I think obviously some stuff in here did not age well. It's demeaning and just silly. And I don't think it really adds much to the movie. Like, I understand the role that Jim Belushi is there to play, but it's hard to watch him sometimes. Not because of him, just it's so harsh. And it brings back like the whole idea of like locker room talk and she's uptight if she doesn't.
I wrote like a third of the way through that guys would love Belushi and women would absolutely hate him. And then as I got further into the movie, I was like, guys would probably hate him too. Like he'd be like that guy who's fun every now and then. Like he's at Mother's and it's like, I'm going to go get ripped with Bernie tonight. But there would be a lot of times where, especially like once you start again, I mean, for this exact reason, we see how he acts, but he's the guy, as soon as you start dating someone, you're like, Bernie, we can't hang out anymore. Like, my wife fucking hates you. He's that guy. How do we feel about the two friend relationships? Like, that's where I understand it had to be for the plot of the movie. Like, they had to bring this dynamic of they're not supporting the relationship or they're giving them a lot of grief and that's making it harder for them. But in reality, that doesn't really, like, it doesn't really happen. You don't have, your friends aren't, like, actively campaigning against your relationships unless they legitimately see something wrong, like, they don't like the other person. But it should have been like, hey, yeah, he's hot, she's hot, like, you guys seem to get along and have fun, like, yeah, good luck.
Yeah, I mean, I think you saw very clear, like, the friends didn't want them together for their own selfish reasons. Like, they wanted their own friends back. And not so much of like, they could have just easily pointed out like, hey, you barely know this person. And maybe, you know, they certainly weren't supportive of their happiness, so to speak. But again, it's very tropey. It's very much like the, oh, I hate that guy. Or like, oh, you shouldn't hang out with him. But I mean, at that point, like Rob Lowe hadn't done anything wrong to be so hated.
They're just bad friends.
Yeah, I think they're just bad friends, honestly. And like, but I do love the scene where Elizabeth Perkins is giving her a hard time about missing when they were going to go to the sauna or the bath or whatever. I do love that she immediately breaks down. She's like, I'm sorry, I got hurt. Okay. Cause like, you could have just kept that going. Like, you're just one of those girls who always immediately emotionally breaking down and like showing, okay, that is an emotionally intelligent conversation. Whereas, you know, you have the scene with Bernie and Danny after Danny's losing his mind, realizing he loves Debbie, where Danny finally is like, oh, actually, you're bad for me. you don't support me at all. And you think you have a breakthrough with him, because what does he say? Something like, there's some mini breakthrough with Belushi. I don't know why I've forgotten about it now, but he says something like, I know, man, I know. But then he immediately becomes a scumbag again.
Yeah, I mean, so, that guy is, he's either single forever or he's divorced five times. There's no in between. He's not, yes, he's not divorced just three times. It's five times.
It's five. It's definitely five. You're right.
Yeah.
So that was tough, but I understand like why they had to exist, you know, for the purpose of pushing things forward. So.
Yeah, I also know that they needed some more conflict between, they needed something to clinch the post New Year's breakup, like the big argument. Dan, what the fuck are you doing in that bar with Megan Mullally? It makes just no sense.
He wanted to get caught. Like, he wanted it to blow up.
It's astounding. It's a astounding lack of judgment.
And they don't even end up really fighting about that. Their big fight is because she's got to take her friend home and he's pissed.
Yeah.
And she's not even.
He's pissed that she's missing New Year's.
Yeah. And, but yeah, no, that's definitely like behavior of somebody who wants to get caught doing that. So then it can all blow up and they can blame it on the other person, but at least it's over. He just didn't have the courage to end it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, and that's another of they're just too young to be playing house together, because they then got in this situation of, you know, this isn't working out, but I don't know how to end it.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have anything else that doesn't work?
Not for now.
Not for now.
I don't think so.
So then let's walk through best scene. I will say this isn't the best scene, but the opening story from Belushi is a great way to open this movie. Is it what we would call politically correct? Is it, you know, is it not obnoxious? Like, it's extremely obnoxious. It's extremely crass. Have I heard similar stories from friends just being ridiculous and probably blatantly lying? Absolutely. They're being very loud and mega horny in public.
Sure.
But the at this point, we don't know a few times in that story really like started to get to me. Like, it's weird, but this like crass, gross, disgusting pig story is a really started this movie off on the right foot. Like, I absolutely loved it.
So tell me. So, okay, so where am I?
So you're probably at the pancake house.
So, okay, I'm over at the pancake house. Who walks in over to the cash register but this chick?
Right.
Yeah, 19, 20-year-old
chick. Who we're talking about?
She wants to buy a pack of Viceroy's.
Oh, I can believe it.
Gets the smokes and does this number about how she forgot her purse up in her room.
Up in her room?
Yeah.
Was she a pro?
At that age?
Yeah.
Well, at this point, we don't know. So down we sit, we get to talking, this, that, blah, 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 and it's come up to my room and I'll pay you back for the smokes.
No.
Yeah.
You're shit.
I'm telling you.
And was she a pro?
At this point, we don't know.
I mean, establishing Belushi from the get-go as number one, an asshole. Number two, the alpha dog in their friendship. Rob Lowe is like the young, you know, idealistic. Like, you can tell he comes from a good family. Like, he was raised to respect women. Just the way he's like, was she a pro? Like, the way he asked things, like, he's like a little boy. And I think establishing that early, while also effectively showing off scenes of Chicago.
Yes.
Of like, they are like saying, this is a Chicago film. We're telling you from this point on, this jerk friend is going to kind of run their relationship, and then you have young hot Rob Lowe. I think it's brilliant. Like,
young,
the subject
Rob.
Matter we could do without, but I think it's a really smart way of doing it.
We get the so far so good montage for their first date, like their first, which I, when the montage was going at first, I was like, oh, this is them like, you know, getting together and stuff. And then midway through, I was like, oh, this is just one day. This is them just skipping a day of work to meet. But also, it's a long montage. This movie, when we did Rocky IV, Caroline brought the stat that Rocky IV is 33% montages. And this movie kind of felt in a similar vein. There's a lot of them.
They love a montage. What did you and Jacqueline do on your first date?
Our first date was at a Frisco Rough Riders baseball game. Double A affiliate of the Rangers. So I drove up to Fort Worth. It was kind of the perfect storm because we were long distance. We had been like messaging because we met on Twitter, as anyone who's been listening to this for a while knows.
As the best relationships
and
do.
My eventual, the guy who's my best friend, who would eventually be my best man at my wedding, was driving cross country because he was moving. He was in the Marines at the time and he was moving to whatever military Marine base is in San Diego. So he was driving. And a friend of mine was going to pitch for Frisco that night, and it all coincided on the same night. I was like, so why don't I come up to see Carter, who's my buddy, and I'll watch Sam pitch, and I'll get the chance to meet Jacqueline. It was really all to meet Jacqueline. So we went to the game to watch Sam pitch, and that was our first date.
Love it.
It was great.
Did you know there was going to be a second date?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was locked in. Okay.
Yeah.
So you could have put so far so good to that. That would have been really cute.
Yeah. That you know... not quite the same vibes, but you know, it would have been good. What is your favorite montage? Because we get a lot of them. There's the montage where they're moving. There's the obviously like the sex montage.
They're all great. Can I tell you, this isn't my favorite one, but I do want to point out the montage where Danny has bought the restaurant and he's redoing it with Gus. I love it because it's the classic, we got to take this thing down to the bolts. Like, we got to redo it all. There's this one shot of Gus, the man who has run this place for years, where he's just like scrubbing a counter and like, oh, brother, I can't believe I'm doing all this. It's so good.
It's the restaurant thing, but nothing about the food.
Well,
nothing
I think Danny just wanted to be the owner. So I think that's why he went in with Gus, is like, he just likes to be the idea man.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe, I don't know, but I did love that for that reason. I think so far so good is like tied for the living inside my heart montage. Cause I do love, like, she's doing the sheets and he's making the sauce and like that really, it's short lived, but it's like that sweet spot of, oh, this is going to work. Like, we can figure each other out, and they have all this crazy sex. You got an original Bob Seger song. You can't go wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought the breakup was actually good. It was actually like kind of tough to, you know, when Rob Lowe finally says, I think one of us should move out. And you can tell that it's been on the mind for a while. And because she's like, and I agree, it's tough. The fight in the rain on St. Patty's Day when he's just saying I love you, that is the one time in the movie I needed more out of the dialogue, because he's just speaking in generalities. I need to, like, if I'm fine with the ending and them, you know, seemingly getting back together and stuff like that, at that moment I needed to know, okay, why? What about like, what about this relationship? What are the reasons that you want to tell her besides just I love you? I need to know why. I need your, you know, I need the, God, what is the speech and set it up on the rooftop, like I need like that. And no, Palm Springs, like, the speech. I need that. I need something like you're in the rain, you're panicked, this is
when
the
Harry
last
met
chance
Sally.
You're gonna get, yes, mm-hmm. yes, like I need, and it doesn't even, it does, Harry's speech and When Harry Met Sally is like beat for beat perfect. I didn't need beat for beat perfect. I need something more than I love you,
just a reason.
He's speaking in general, it more seems like he's panicked. He's like, I think this was the right move, I love you, I need you, give me something.
Well, I think that's also reflective of like how a 23-year-old man, most of them, I'm not, you know, I'm just speaking in generalities here, would do that, because he can't articulate it. And he knows he made a mistake, but he doesn't really know why. And she's the one who actually says, you're just used to getting everything you want. So when you don't get something, you freak out about it. Like, you love the idea of always getting what you want. Now that you can't have me, I'm more interesting to you.
She's 100% right there.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it is. And that's why I say, like, I like that they didn't make the ending this very clear cut, oh, they got back together. It's more of a, let's try it again, because I don't know if these two would make it in a few weeks. They're young and they don't know how to communicate. And that's, it's going to come back. The reasons why it didn't work the first time, unless you're actively working on them, the answer is not, oh, we should be back in each other's lives. It should be like, if we want to be together, we need to work on these things. So it works.
What is the best scene in this movie?
I love the first hookup. I love the headphones and the music and the beanbag. I realize it's not like a pivotal.
She throws the beanbag out too when she moves in. Isn't that one of the things that doesn't make the cut? The beanbag?
Yes. The beanbag goes, which, I mean, I get it. There's no telling how many people he had in that beanbag.
It was black too, wasn't it?
Exactly.
Oof. It's tough. It shouldn't. The person at the beanbag store in 1980 seeing Rob Lowe holding that beanbag should be, you sure?
You sure? No, not gonna
buddy,
work.
Buddy, it looks like you do well. Can I interest you in this white beanbag?
I think it's just really well done. And like, she can't hear him in the headphones. I love that scene.
Yeah.
Maybe not the most emotionally moving, but when I think of the movie, I think of that scene.
What's the best quote in this movie?
Mm-hmm. You go first.
This is literally from the first, the Belushi story.
Yeah.
But when I guess it's the portion when they're like in the room or whatever, and she says something about getting rough, and he's like, so I say, you know what? I'm liberal. So I throw a chair at her. I'm just like, what the fuck?
I
legitimately laughed out loud.
And by accident, it catches her a good one on the ass. Thwack, we got this big red mark.
Oh, no.
Well, I'm all sorry and so forth. But what does this broad do but let out a squeal of pleasure and relief that would fucking kill a horse?
No.
So what the hell? I'm liberal. I pick up a chair and I heave it at her.
Draw blood?
At this point, no.
Oh my God. There's a lot in here that I love. Picking a favorite is really hard.
I complained about the scene in the rain, but I did. Demi Moore has the better ones in that scene, but when he's like, you know, when he's begging for her back, she says, you had it. I gave you love and you asked me to leave.
Yep.
Like,
yeah, she's like, I gave it to you
again. And but that's throwing it right to him. Like, I gave this to you. Do you have a rebuttal for this of why you did this? Like, do you have anything to say for yourself? Or are you just trying to be hot in the rain?
I like a lot of the exchanges between her and what's her name? The roommate, the friend, the kindergarten teacher. I also, by the way, love the scene. It's the one scene where we see her soften is when she's teaching and the little girl wets her pants waiting on her. And you think, oh my God, she's so annoyed by being there. We know her as this like really abrasive woman. She immediately says, I've got underpants in my locker. Nobody has to know, which I think is great. But I think she has a lot of the best quotes. She's just so incredibly mean. This is not like it's a good quote, but just any scene with Alex in it where she's like, come on, baby. What do you think? My husband and children are replicants. And then Rob Lowe immediately uses the word replicant in the following scene. I think that's pretty good too.
Yeah. Belushi has one after, you know, an argument with, Rob Lowe has an argument with their boss, the head of the restaurant supply company. And he says, you know, for $600, I could have that guy put to sleep.
It's so good. Oh, one line I like, and again, not because it's particularly profound, but it's when Danny and Bernie are sitting like on the loading dock, and there's, I can't remember her name, but it's like that one woman at work that Bernie keeps pointing out, and he's like, look at her, you just know she's not wearing no underpants. Like, the way he says it is so good. It's a fun flick. I like it.
It is. Most athletic moment in this movie, I have already shouted out. It is Danny catching a line drive with no glove. That's impressive.
I'm going to say it's
fucked his hand up.
Demi Moore arching her back.
That's completely fair. Completely fair. Was it yoga? Was it?
It was something.
Putting the work in.
The Pilates. I don't know. I don't know. But yes.
The Lenny Harris Pinch Hitter Award for Best Supporting Character. You've already thrown your hat in the ring for the
My helmet. Yes.
There's not, this keeps it pretty tight with our main four.
Yeah.
No one else really gets to share the ball that much. There's like the boss that she's sleeping with. Like, he's kind of, but he's not, he's no fun. That's your, that is your classic. There are two types of men in the 80s, like hot men in the 80s are quote unquote hot. There's Rob Lowe, who's extremely pretty. And then there's overly hairy guy.
Yeah.
It's a mix of two people in the 80s.
I could, I mean, he's not really, he doesn't get a lot of times. He's not like a total supporting character, but you could say Gus.
Yeah, it's like, I, that's who I was thinking, because I mean, he has what, like two or three lines? Like, there's really,
but they're all emotional. Gus.
Yeah, there's Gus. There's the boss at the restaurant supply company. Like, it's all pretty button. It's, in retrospect, it's kind of like a play. You got, you know, you got your main.
It does seem like a play.
It's almost like this was based on a play. How about that?
How about it?
Defend the villain. Who's a villain in this movie?
Their age.
Age, the concept of dating under like 28 years old.
The idea of, for a relationship to progress, it has to follow certain steps, you know? And I really, like, if you want those steps collectively as a couple, great. This is not me knocking tradition at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, my parents kind of were this couple. Like, they met in 83, moved in together very quickly, got married in 85, you know, but it's just, the difference is they worked out, but it's not because they had, I doubt, I shouldn't say this, I wasn't around. I doubt it's because they had incredible communication skills. Like, I think they had to develop those later. But I think the pressure of the idea, you know, I talk a lot about the ring by spring thing in the South, like when you're in college
You know, and I mean, the SEC, Baylor, all the Liberty, that's like ring by freshman year spring.
Yeah, that's when you add religion to when you add Southern Baptist, that gets, it's just the idea that for a relationship to be successful and to be fulfilling and healthy, that it's got to look a certain way, and you have to, well, if you're serious about each other, you got to live together, and then you got to get married, and you got to do that. And if you're not ready for those things, and if you don't know how to talk to each other, and you don't really know what you want, like, that's the villain. Mm-hmm. You can't.
Yeah. They both felt that, like, these were the steps they were supposed to take.
Yeah.
They felt, but, oh, we should move in. We're having a good time. We should move in together. Like, we should try to make this work. We should do all these hot, you know, what is it? Is it Christmas or is it New Year's where they're like trying to, they're like doing it at home. They're like, we should just do this together. It's New Year's. Yeah. We should just do this together at home with champagne. Like, this is what we're supposed to do.
Which sounds boring. I'm 37. Sounds terrible.
I mean, that's the thing. We, like, it's now, like, our New Year's tradition is, like, we drink something, we make drinks, and, like, we watch When Harry Met Sally, but, like, we've been married, and, like, we're, you know, it's, and we have kids. Yeah, once you have kids, it's out the door, but, like, they were, what, like, 22? Don't stay in. What are you doing? You still have the ability to, like, not waking up feeling like shit. Like, you could ride this out. The thing. At 22, you can also drink all day on the first because your body is still able to do that.
God. But again, it's like, it's your choice. Like, if both of you as a couple are like, I just want to stay in, fine. But don't do it because you think that makes you more adult or mature, or that your relationship's in a good place if you don't have to go to bars. And you don't have to like bars. I don't care. I'm just saying, like,
They like bars.
Go to
Demi
bars.
Demi Moore probably doesn't like the bar as much as Dan likes the bar, but, like,
Dan loves the bar. And if she doesn't, then you can compromise on that or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, that's why I get so annoyed with Danny, like, getting mad at her for ruining New Year's. The original plan was to eat the salad alone. Yeah. Like, you went to a bar. What did she really ruin just by getting her friend? Calm down.
You did not want to stay in, and she lets you go out to the bar, and you just made out with Megan Mullally. Like,
and she saw it and didn't say anything. She was focused on her friend.
Yeah. The Peter Gallagher Award for the hottest person in this movie.
Come on.
It's Belushi.
It's a tie, though, I would say, to me and Rob.
They're a unit. They're molded together like a piece of silly putty in the bathtub, and it's just the hottest silly putty you've ever seen.
Ever.
Best time, worst time. Who has the best time in this movie? Who has the worst time? I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
Is Belushi self-aware enough to know he's having a bad time for most of this movie?
He has those few moments of where he drops the bit and shows you like he knows he's miserable and alone. But the fact that he doesn't care enough about that to stop with the bit, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like in that case, he might be just having the bit. Like he just kind of loves being an asshole.
And that like early in the movie, that scene where Rob knows that he can immediately throw him off by saying, hey, have you ever had sex in a plane before? He did that to distract him and he knows he's going to have a story. Like he's that guy and he has to know he's that guy. Like,
yeah. He's got to know that time is coming for him though. And like in, he's on the border. Cause we're assuming he's older than Dan by quite a bit. Not like
I
a
would
ton,
hope
but
we're assuming that.
Yeah. I was assuming to me, he seemed like 32. But like, and he had been in, you know, been at that job longer and things like that, but he's going to get to the age where it's just like the young guys don't want to hang out with him. And then the guys, any close contemporaries of his are with their families or doing like not telling stories about like having the fire department called during some like sexcapade.
Which is why like guys like that tend to hang out with younger guys so they can feel like they're contemporaries. I will say I just looked it up. Rob Lowe and Jim Belushi are only 9 years apart in real life.
Wow. Belushi, the 9 years older.
Yeah, right. So Belushi's 69.
Yeah, of course,
and Rob...
he wasn't like 11 when this movie was made.
Rob is 60.
So that would attract. So he would have been like 31. He would have been like, and so at 31, when you're 22, the 31-year-old guy who's talking about all his stories and stuff like that, like that's cool. When you're 31 and there's a guy who's 40 who's talking like that, you're like, you're a fucking loser.
You're stupid. Yeah.
Like, dude, stop. Like, no one cares.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. It's a rough watch for him.
Yeah. That's only fun when it's your divorced friend. And sure. He's just like, I'm just like trying to get it back.
Yep.
I think Gus had a terrible time.
Gus had a rough time.
The finances that Rob Lowe is like the only customer at that place.
That's what kills me. He's like, you can't support this in your own, Rob Lowe. And I also want to know what stopped Rob Lowe from stepping in at any point? Because all we see at the end is like he sees the lease sign go up and he's like, what if? It's like, you
me and Gus.
You could have done this the whole time, bro. But okay, that's fine.
The girl who pees herself in the middle of the hallway has a terrible time.
She, bless it. And you know, that's like the first day of school. So they set up this thing to be like August, like end of summer, first day. And she's just trying to like get her attention. And then she, and I felt so bad because as all like little girls, those of us who were little girls in the 80s and early 90s, we were always wearing tights every day, even in August. You had to have your tights on. Do you know how like logistically annoying that is when you wet your pants with tights on? Because you,
I'm going to tell you right now, I don't know. I have no idea.
You've gone through the underwear and the tights. You got to take both off. And she probably didn't have replacement tights in her locker. So she's going to go home and her mother's going to freak out because she's not wearing tights. We had it rough. I'm just saying.
Things have gotten so much better.
I mean, they're more casual now. I think moms are just like, we're tired.
I will say this is like a weird thing, but I was leaving my neighborhood earlier today and I had to stop because the school bus was dropping like the middle schoolers and high schoolers who couldn't drive yet off. And I was like, wow, you kids can just wear anything now. Like you just like, it's like everyone's dressing differently. Like there was a kid in like a sick ass Dennis Rodman shirt. And I was like, you weren't even alive when he was around.
You're wearing trucker hats again, but with big ugly patches sewn onto them. Imagine
wasn't
a trucker
the
hat.
The Von Dutch hat or something different.
Yes, but it's like with a bunch of ugly bedazzled patches. So like
The bedazzle's an interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting just like
aspect.
They took the Von Dutch era and made it worse, which is really saying something. But yes, the kids are all right, but they look terrible.
They're
dressing like bozos.
They do. I would have worn that kid's Dennis Rodman shirt though. Like
sure.
That was cool.
Yeah, fair.
That was cool. Did anyone have a good time in this movie? I guess Belushi, like kind of, but
I don't think anyone had a consistently good time.
No, it's kind of like a Misery Loves Company kind of movie.
Yeah. Like maybe the owner of Mother's.
Yeah, I mean, that place looks like it's doing awesome.
Yeah.
Like doing a banging business. Good enough to sponsor the softball team.
Exactly. Exactly.
Sponsoring the Kitchen Supply softball team. we're going to skip the Keith Morrison Dateline episode because neither of us has that Keith Morrison impression.
I do not.
Caroline went to go see Challengers tonight.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if you noticed. She hit up our group text about it. Don't want to.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. Two thumbs up from Caroline. Challengers. Roster moves. Which character in this movie would you swap for Air Bud?
The bear's lamp. If Air Bud was just hanging out in the background doing all these serious scenes.
What if he was wearing? What if he was wearing like the lampshade on his head? It was just a dog. So you swap out. You swap out the pole and leave the lampshade. So Air Bud is just sitting there with the lampshade on his head.
I would love that. I think that would be. It's about as ridiculous as that bear's lamp just being like part of their home. Not to mention the big bear mannequin that's in his bathroom, which makes no sense.
Yeah, that's a weird.
Steamy in there. Why would you anyway?
It's a weird, yeah. That thing would get like damp and then like moldy and
yeah, not good.
Don't like it. I mean, listen, if Air Bud's Belushi, that's fucking hilarious.
I was gonna say that
the movie starts and Rob Lowe is just walking Air Bud and he's barking this crass story.
Was she a pro?
Ruff.
That would be amazing, actually. Okay, I changed my answer. Belushi or, is Air Bud.
Or if because we don't ever see them do anything, so if Air Bud is Demi Moore's boss. And so we have a scene where she's getting out of bed with Air Bud and she's like, we can't be doing this anymore, Air Bud. Can't
I just
do
took
it.
Some lithium. God. The quintessential like skeezy ass rich yuppie bro in the 80s. Yeah. Was her boss.
Yeah. All the dudes like that. If you had to pick a guy in this movie who got hit hard by the financial crash in the late 80s, it would have been that guy.
Yeah.
Hit hard.
Man. The glory days.
What a time. What a time to be alive. I am one of those people who are like, I love the aesthetic of the 80s. I love the vibe. Like I love like one of my if I could have anything from any movie happen to me, it would be to have gotten like Hot Tub Time Machine. Like send me back to a ski resort in 1985 for a weekend. I would love it. I would have an incredible time, which is really funny because I am also in the extreme progressive left part of the country that's like Ronald Reagan was the devil and like a lot of things that happened in the 80s have led to the moral and financial decay of America and a lot of bad stuff. But I really wish I was there to enjoy the good things.
I just like I think about this more than I should. I imagine like living in a big city in the 80s. You wake up, you like style your perm, mm-hmm. You put on the most enormous shoulder pads you own in your pink blazer. You put on your sneakers to walk to work because your
Perfect
heels
Day
are in your
by
bag.
Hoka is playing.
Yeah. I mean, not of the time, but yeah.
Not of the time, but that's the vibe.
And like, you do your job. You only take work calls because there's no email, there's no texting, there's nothing. You are disconnected unless mm-hmm. somebody calls you at work. You leave work and maybe you go to a happy hour thing. Again, you're only gone for an hour because you need to get home and you have some phone calls to make. You go home, you do a Jane Fonda workout tape, you eat a TV dinner and watch Elf, do a shit ton of Coke.
Yeah.
And then go clubbing. But then you like come back around 6 a.m. and get like 2 hours of sleep.
Yeah. And you're in Chicago. MJ is still scoring. It's like when he's young, he's still scoring 30 points a night.
Exactly. You're at a Bulls game. Just another mountain of Coke. You're charging everything to the green Amex. Like yes. You got the charge card that you hope you can pay off at the end of the month. Life is good.
Your car is absolutely in the shape of a box. Yeah. A lot of hard edges in your car.
Very hard angles for your car.
A lot of wood, a lot of faux wood in the panels.
watching Miami Vice, like,
oh yeah,
drinking New Coke or Tab. I think New Coke was out at this point. Drinking Tab out of like those big. Oh my god!
These
I
people
been
didn't
so
know
good
how good
the
they had it. Although I think I think the general vibe of the 80s was like, wow, we have it real good right now.
Yeah, and I mean, they all paid for these.
Yes. And if they didn't, their children sure as hell did.
Yes. They were also chain smoking. They were, they paid for this probably in the past 20 years.
That's one thing. That's one thing about this movie in the 80s too. Like when he pulls out like the Zippo lighter or whatever and like lights up a cigarette in her apartment, I'm like, God, this is the fucking times, man.
I mean, that was my upbringing. Like two chain smokers in the house and everything's, I mean, God.
That's when I was in college. I was living in Reno for a summer, and we went to, I had a series. I was playing on baseball, like a collegiate like summer ball team. We had a series in a place called, it was Marysville, and my buddy's dad and stepmom were moving out of their house. And so we went up there to like hang out for the night. And you could just smoke in the house. And I was like, is this heaven? Like, you can just smoke in here? Like, this is wonderful. And yeah. Again, like, it was like my little foray into what the 80s were like. Like, sounds like just a great time. Man. Man. We really went there.
We did.
Does this movie have a big chill moment? I say no, because the getting back together moment, it's not like a When Harry Met Sally kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue the point where, like, he could have just broken up with her and not ended it with the I don't love you anymore. That was just mean. You don't have to go that far.
Yeah.
You should only ever say that if your ex-partner or partner is being cruel to you, by the way. Yes. Like, if they are aggressive and they won't leave you alone and they're intentionally being mean and trying to harm you, like, yeah, you could say that then. She tried hard. You just didn't want her around. But for him to say that to her and like the gas.
For you to also in the course of like 5 months get to a point where you love her and then you don't love her anymore.
Exactly.
How long did you love her for?
Because it's infatuation. Yes. I mean, that's exactly what it is. We still don't know by the end of this movie if Danny is capable of loving somebody other than himself.
Well, so, with that being said, before More Restore, prequel, sequel, or remake, there is a remake. We're going to put that off the table.
Yeah. If sequel, for sure.
A sequel. So, you know, what are they doing right now?
Right now? I mean, God. Right now, like, they have kids in their 30s if they stayed together.
Or it's a sequel and it's them reconnecting in Chicago.
I would
years later. One of that's she what I he's would been love. Running a restaurant. Maybe he's got a couple. Maybe Gus's thing. Maybe he did good. He's been running a restaurant. He's not like super successful, but he's successful enough. She moves back, goes to one of the restaurants that she doesn't know is his. There he is.
I love this idea.
Yeah, there he
is. We gotta tell Rob Lowe about this because he wants a sequel. He's said this before. He's like, I would love to return to that story and see where they are now. That is a brilliant way to do it.
And you know what? This is one of those things where, because a lot of the times, like me and Caroline Spencer talked about Caddyshack a couple weeks ago. And we were like, well, like a couple of the people are dead. A couple of people don't like each other anymore. A couple of these people like don't need money. The thing, I don't think anyone in this movie like doesn't need money because Rob Lowe is still taking like big paychecks. He's doing that game show. He's doing the Atkins commercials. He's doing
the podcast.
Yeah, the cable TV show. Like that's a sign of a guy who maybe he doesn't need money, but he still wants money because that's a difference. Mm-hmm. There are people who are just like, I don't need to work unless I really love it. Demi Moore did the Capote versus the Swan with that FX miniseries. I didn't watch it, but it seemed interesting.
Yeah, so I didn't see it, but I heard
but like she's
things.
still wanting to work, still wanting to do stuff. Jim Belushi, your guess is as good as mine. Jim Belushi could have $100 million. He could have $100. I'm not really sure. So
he was in Oxford like a year ago. He's friends with like the guy who owns Blue Delta.
Oh,
the men who own Blue Delta, rather, the jeans company. Buy those; they're great jeans.
I might be remembering this wrong, but did Jim Belushi get very big into marijuana, like the business?
Yes, Yes. So I think that was one of the reasons he was there.
Yeah. So,
but
yeah, Belushi's farm. He's okay. So I'm leaning $100 million. Yeah.
I think
he had
a come
show
back
growing Belushi. So yeah, we can get him back though.
Get him back. And he's like in a long, like he's been married 30 years and just still madly in love with his wife, who isn't Elizabeth Perkins, by the way.
I was going to say, are we sure?
Make it Megan Mullally. That would be perfect.
That would be, yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Rob Lowe, because you're the most online one of all of them, I'm going to isolate this audio clip and tweet it at you. Rob Lowe is like two of my tweets before. I feel like we're friends.
Oh, yeah. That's official.
Get this made, or at least do like a mini. We just want to see the update, but I think that's brilliant of like a reconnecting about last night. Oh, that would be great.
If a 87-minute sequel to this popped up on Netflix, it'd be great. And they went really campy with it. They brought in some 80s vibes. They maybe even kind of really like laid it out that, you know, one of these movies where we know how it's going to end. Even if they didn't put in their full effort, it would still be really fun to see them reconnect. It would be.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. And then like they do the same thing where eventually they're getting in the shower, one of their backs goes out. Really gets
God. It would work cuz the thing.
They're trying to do that shower thing and then one of them's like, I can't bend my fucking knee like that. Like
I would just watch a Funny or Die like 20 minute parody of that. Yes.
For sure.
Okay. So now we've shifted, but same idea.
Same vibes. But Alex, I am grateful that you brought this movie into my life. I'm glad I saw it. I'm putting St. Elmo's Fire on the watch list.
Yes. They shoot at the University of Maryland, but they pretend it's Georgetown.
Oh, wow. That seems like a vibe. I feel like they're not the first people who spent some time at University of Maryland and then pretended it was Georgetown.
I too go to College Park and like, oh, I wish this was Georgetown. Just kidding. That's a joke. I don't hate Maryland. That's a joke with a friend of mine who went there. I love you, Maryland.
Yeah.
I get myself in trouble on these podcasts. I say things and people don't know that I joke a lot and they think I really hate them.
You know, anyone who's still listening an hour and 30 minutes in is they're here for it all. That's exactly. Yeah. Yeah. There's like six people. But Alex, where can the folks follow you?
You can follow me anywhere, I suppose. I'm on Twitter at Alex McDaniel. Same with Instagram. Nothing interesting is happening there, though. And I left for the win a few weeks ago and tweeted about it. All good reasons. Lots of exciting stuff coming up, which I can't talk about right now. But
as I told people, you are the content.
I am the content.
You are the content. The content is you.
Keep it up. But in the fall, I will be making a special appearance in Kyle's book. So
yes.
Go
yes,
ahead
she
and
will.
Buy that.
What a segue for Movies
Wasn't
with
that
Balls,
great?
The greatest
I
sports
set you
movie
up.
Of all time. Analyzed, mapped, and illustrated. Available for pre-order wherever books are sold. One wonderful page of writing by Alex, the best page in the book. The thing I love about Alex is I was like, hey, can we talk about like why Hot Rod has resonated, why it's good? And she, bam, in my inbox, like
bam,
very soon after, was just ready to go. Her words like written out. I didn't change it. Copy pasted, put it in the manuscript, like we're good. That feels good. So
if you want to read it, buy the book.
You can do that wherever books are sold. It will be delivered on September 24th or a couple days after. I don't really know how it's all gonna work. If you enjoyed this episode of Big Screen Sports, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, rate and leave a review for an Apple podcast. If you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/bigscreensports. Next week we start a really fun theme month in May. If you want to know what that is, you can join the Patreon. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company. serving collectors since 1945.